Hello, Internet. My name's Jonathan Cook.
And I'm Matt Noble.
And welcome to the monthly Screen Verdict podcast. We're so
Do you remember me, Jonathan?
Matthew Goblet? Something.
Matt Noble. We've had a bit of a break over the Christmas, New Year's, February, whatever period. Life.
It just gets in the way sometimes, but we're back and we're gonna get back on a schedule. It's the New Year's resolution, more Screen Verdict podcast, and what better way to kick that off with a Pixar review?
Oh yeah, I was at a wedding last night and I kept on calling out, "Oh yeah," and the person next to me goes, "You're calling out, oh yeah, too much." it sounds a bit sexual. Like, oh, no, I didn't mean it like that at all.
you need another catchphrase. Like, send us a message, facebook.com/screenverdictpodcast. What should Matt be yelling at weddings?
Yeah. I'm not sure what I should be yelling at weddings, but I've got an idea for a catchphrase. I bumped into some boys I used to teach at the cricket over summer. I said, "Oh, Mr. Noble, I saw you at the cricket game the week before." So, and he knew exactly where I was sitting, so I guess he did actually see me there. I said, "Oh, yeah, was I on my own?" And he said, "Yeah." And the other kid went, "That'd be right." Well, that's a pretty good catchphrase. "That'd be right."
I feel like if I were a teacher, I would just essentially view class as like a free open mic. Like, I would just constantly be trying out catchphrases. Like, someone says something, we ask a question and the student gets it incorrect, and you just go, "That's gotta hurt."
Yeah. I feel like it's a bit of a, like, minefield for impressions as well. Last year, I was talking to a kid who was sitting like Back to the Future, and I said, "Would you want to see my Marty McFly impression?" And the kid said, "No."
Well, sit down and shut up, because I'm doing it anyway.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. So, who are you going to be doing impressions of this week, Matt? What film are we reviewing?
We are reviewing Coco.
Coco, yes, the latest. I don't know, they may have released another one since this one came out. But the last one that we saw was Coco. I was super excited for this because we've talked about this, Matt. I really enjoy the Pixar originals. Some of the sequels, you know, Toy Story 3 in particular I love, but a lot of the sequels I don't think are the stronger Pixar films. We love seeing a new world that they create, the imagination that they bring to the screen, and Day of the Dead, just in general, I think is just such an interesting sort of, like, it's visually and just culturally, there's just a lot going on, and I thought there was a lot for them to play with here, so I was really excited to see what they did with Coco.
It's rich, fertile ground for a Pixar film.
The Mexicans have done the legwork, as usual, and now Pixar can just fill that in with some, hopefully, a good story and an animation. So we are going to go into the story, and we're just going to let you know, because the film has been out for a little while, we are going to discuss spoilers, so we'll get you with a quick spoiler alert. Spoiler alert!
Spoiler alert! There are going to be spoilers about Coco. Now,
so Matt, where does this begin? What do you? How does the story engage you, if at all? At what point do you get pulled in?
We're introduced to a family. That family, there is a young girl called Coco. The father leads the family to pursue a career in music, and leaves his wife there, and the baby sort of abandons his family to the pursuit of music. So the family decided, you know what? Music is the problem. no more music.
Yeah, this is a Footloose type situation. With band dancing, with band music, we're going to focus on shoemaking.
Yeah.
If you were in Miguel's position, would you be okay with this? Would you be more interested in playing music, or does the shoemaking sound more exciting to you?
Well, I guess, like, in their mind, like, family isn't going to be broken up by shoes. Shoes are not sexy enough to break up a family, but the glitz and glamour of the music industry could be. And they never want anyone to leave their family again or break up the family.
Yeah, it's like people aren't fighting over, like, the free peanuts at a meal. They're fighting over the ice cream, like the last bit of ice cream. That's what's going to cause a fight at family dinner. So they're like, we're gonna get rid of all that jazz. I don't know. I had to do music in high school, and I was terrible at it. And they never made me try shoemaking. So maybe I'd be good at shoemaking. Maybe I'd enjoy that even more than music.
Well, the podcast doesn't work out. We can set up a shoe shop. Cobbling away.
Yeah. Just go to shoeverdicts.com for all the... I think we should reserve that now, just in case.
Would that be a website where people buy shoes, or they listen to our reviews of shoes?
Yeah, maybe people take pictures of shoes that they're thinking of buying, and then we say, oh no, that doesn't suit you at all. You look horrible at that. Pick these. Go with these. That's a great purchase.
We might want to keep the verdicts, like, branding, but I'm not too... I don't mind the site, like, shoesreviews.com.
Shoes reviews. Yeah. It's like shoes reviews... and verdictforcontinuity.com.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. We've got our plan B settled. We've got our plan B organized.
I was about to say, I feel like we're not going to actually reserve any of those domain names, so I guess that's on offer for any of our listeners.
Yeah, we can work out some sort of licensing deal. So Miguel, though, he's not as into the shoes. He wants to play music. He's sneaking up into that little, what is it, crawl space or something with his friend and dog, Dante. And he's playing guitar, watching old videos of, Ernesto de la Cruz.
Yeah, who was tragically killed by a light falling on him in a show.
Yes, the show's not over until the fat lady sings or you get crushed to death on stage.
Yep. And it's very Looney Tunes-esque, that death. But I guess in Looney Tunes they just pop back up.
Yeah. Now I thought, I bet you that Ernesto de la Cruz is his granddad.
Yeah.
I saw this coming. And then sort of like the turning point, I don't know, around 15 minutes into the film, is he finds, what is it, he accidentally break like a photo frame or something, and then he sees in the frame that with his grandmother is a picture of Ernesto de la Cruz and his guitar. Like, he recognizes the guitar, right? Is that what he's famous for?
Yeah, the guitar. Yeah, the guitar is something. The character's been ripped off the photo, right? So you can't see the guy, but you see the guitar or something like that. We've seen this movie a little bit ago, so.
Yeah, so he's like, I'm related to the Ernesto de la Cruz. I can pursue my dreams and be a great guitar player like him.
And desert my family. I feel like music gets a bit of a bum rap when it's really... The dad who left is really the bad guy.
Yeah. It's, well, that's something interesting that the film brings up, because it doesn't tell you pursuing your dreams is bad, but it also says if you pursue your dreams, that doesn't free you of all responsibility. You know, there are other things that need to be taken care of. So it's an interesting balance sort of portrayed in the film. But Miguel, he's all about it. He wants to go perform in the talent show, but does he get his guitar confiscated? So he's like, I'm going to go steal Ernesto's guitar because I'm related to him. It's really mine. It's not really stealing, right?
Yeah, and I think he was like borrowing it, like he was going to put it back after. So there's some big talent show. So he goes and his guitar gets broken. He can't perform the talent show. He needs to perform the talent show to get his dreams. So then he sneaks into Ernesto. Is it Ernesto? Is that the pop star's name?
Yeah.
Yeah, sneaks into his sort of, is it a crypt or a, like, where they've buried him? But it's like a little room. He's that big a deal, this guy, that he gets his own room.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So there are consequences to steal the guitar, because apparently stealing from the dead means you end up being cursed.
And well, so, on that day, I think you just picked the bad day to do it on.
Because
there's this Day of the Dead. Now, I know nothing about the Day of the Dead. All I know about Day of the Dead is from Coco. So this is the Coco Day of the Dead. It could be 100% accurate. Could be heaps far off. But it's that you put up a photo of all your family members and relatives and on this day, and you leave them plates and treats of their favourite foods and stuff. And if your photo is put up somewhere, you are allowed to cross over from the land of the dead into the real world, although no one, you're a ghost, no one sees you. And you can go and take the treats back with you. So if you died, Jonathan, I'd put up a photo of you on the Day of the Dead and, I don't know, some Subway cookies or something that you enjoy. And then you, because your photo's up, they'll let you out to come and collect the cookies.
Ooh, that sounds like a good deal.
Yeah. So what this kid did was he took something from the dead on the Day of the Dead. You're meant to give stuff to the dead on that day, not take.
Oh, man. Miguel, he didn't think this through. He either didn't know all the rules or he didn't think this through.
Yeah. And I guess then he becomes sort of dead.
Yeah, he has like 24 hours or until sundown or something like that to, I think, receive a blessing from his family that can undo the curse, or else that means he'll be stuck. He'll be stuck in the land of the dead.
So he's got to find his dead relatives to give him a blessing. But the problem is, all his dead relatives say they'll only give him a blessing if he promises to never play music again, his love.
That's tough. That's a real catch 22. That's a very stern, strict stance on music.
It's almost like for a bit, like you're going, is this a game of chicken? Like, how close does he need to get to that deadline before the family members go, like, they just go, okay, you get the blessing.
Yeah.
Surely that's somewhat of a bluff, right?
So here's the thing. If they were all living and the rule was you die if you don't undo the curse by this time, for living family members to take the stance of we're not going to help you and we're going to let you die, that's a very hard line. That's a strict stance on dance to the point where you're going to kill a child in your family. But the people refusing to give the blessing in this instance are already dead. And they know that being dead's not so bad. Like, things in the land of the dead seem pretty cool. This is kind of the same, really. You're just skeletons instead.
Yeah.
So it seems a little bit less insane for them to be like, eh, well, if you don't do it, then you can just stay here and hang with us.
Yeah, I guess. I feel like they're, like, the whole reason they're making him give up music is because he doesn't want him to leave his family behind on Earth, right? But if they kill him, well, then he's left them anyway.
Yeah, and he's free to play music in the Land of the Dead.
Yeah. So, I feel like they're dealing from a bad hand, this family. But anyway, he thinks, because Ernesto's his dad, and he loves music, so he's like, I just need to go find and get the blessing from him.
Yeah, but unfortunately, he's a celebrity. It's not like you can just rock up at, you know, Beyonce's house and be like, Beyonce, like, there's this curse thing going on. I really just need, like, you know, just 2 to 5 of your minutes.
Yeah.
There's a fair few hoops he has to jump through in order to get that close to Ernesto.
And to get there, he bumps into a bit of a, I don't know, a gypsy dead guy, whatever, dead, I don't know who is it.
Yeah, so he bumps into Hector. He's kind of this, like, down-on-his-luck type guy. And he is, he says, if you take my photo, if I help you get back to the land of the living, can you put my photo up there? So that means I can cross to the land of the living.
And get treats.
And get treats and, you know, see my family or my daughter or whatever before I disappear. Because no one's putting up his picture, you know. He's kind of like a bit of like a loser guy, and this is his only chance to cross to the land of the living.
And we find out in the film that it's not just about getting tasty treats like cookies and donuts and things. It's also, after a while, if no one's put your picture up, so it's an X number of years or whatever.
I think it's when you become forgotten.
When you're forgotten, when no one remembers you.
Yeah.
You then disappear from the land of the dead, mm-hmm. and you're gone forever.
Mm.
Or, I guess, go to some other afterlife.
Yeah, so, as joyous in some way the portrayal of death is, don't you think it's a little bit scary that you go through life not knowing exactly how the afterlife is going to work? This, you know, some fear of death. You die, you get to go to the land of the dead, and you're like, oh, this isn't so bad. Yeah, we can celebrate this. Death isn't that bad and that scary. But that's not final. There's another place. Like, you have to worry about a second afterlife.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, give me a break.
Yeah, I agree.
So he doesn't want to disappear, and Miguel's got to get to Ernesto. But luckily, there's a way, because there's another talent show.
Yeah.
And if you win the talent show, you get to go to the big party at Ernesto's palace.
If you didn't know anybody, you'd think it was Glee, all these talent shows.
Yeah. It's not Day of the Dead, it's Day of the High School Musical.
Yeah.
So, what does he do? Does he goes to the show. And at this point, we've seen him kind of play guitar on his own, but we've not seen Miguel perform in public. But Hector's like, you can do it, man. And then he goes out there, and what's that song? Like the You Driving Me Loco song? Is that the one he plays?
I think so. I can't remember, to be honest.
Un Poco Loco, something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that goes down well. That was a big hit. He decides not to play Remember Me, the big hit from Ernesto that everybody else was practicing. He goes with another song and kills it.
Yeah, don't do Piano Man at the talent show. Everyone does Piano Man.
So he
doesn't actually win the contest because he has to run away because the family gets there. He then ends up, the guys who won the talent showed up just letting him join their band to get up there, and he meets Ernesto.
Ernesto, yeah. And you think that's great. He's reunited with his dad. He's going to get to be like One blessed? Of, oh, his granddad, sorry. And
great-granddad, maybe.
No, what is it? I can't remember what I was going to say. But anyway, thinks he's going to get his blessing, but, a twist, a double twist, if you will. What happens next, Matt?
I'm going to say what the big twists are. I don't know if this one happens next or not, but it turns out Ernesto is not Miguel's great-great-grandfather. That Hector is, and Ernesto killed him in the real world and stole all his music and guitar.
Yeah, that was heartbreaking because Hector, he decides, you know what? I left my family to pursue this. I miss my family. I need to go back. And Ernesto's like, no, you can't leave. I need you. And he's like, no, I gotta go. So he kills him and he takes his songs. So all the songs that Miguel grew up loving weren't Ernesto's. They were actually his dad. And his dad was killed for those songs.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Pretty big twist. I like this. This made things pretty interesting.
Yes. I like that. They give you the semi-predictable twist, and you're like, oh, I saw that coming. But no, they gave you the 1-2 Magoo. That was just a setup for the real twist. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was good. And good message, too, about, you know, who do you have as idol? You know, don't idolize people that just disappoint you. So then, like, it sort of just turns into a bit of an exciting sort of movie where it's sort of trying to get, you know, Hector exposed, and he can get the blessing from his family and then take the photo back so Hector can visit his daughter again.
So I can't remember how it plays out, but there's the big concert and I think Ernesto ends up getting crushed. He dies in the Land of the Dead the same way he died in the Land of the Living, which is kind of funny.
Not before, like, he confesses to everything and they get it on tape. They get it on the big screen for the concert.
Yeah.
Which I always love that. I always love a public exposure like that. Well, like that. Boy, that could be it.
So he ends up getting the blessing from his family, and Hector gets reunited with, who was it? Imelda?
Isn't it Coco?
Coco is Hector's daughter. I think Imelda was his wife.
Oh, the wife. Yes, he meets the wife. Yes, sorry. Yes, the wife is in the Land of the Dead too. So they make up. She's pretty angry at him for leaving at all, I think, which is fair enough. Like, it's sort of like, how long can you desert your family and then decide to come back and it's okay?
Yeah. That's... I guess that depends on the terms you set before you leave. You're like, okay, guys, I'm going on this music tour. I'll be back in 6 months. I'll send you any money that I make. I'm going to miss you, but it's for the good of the family. You're like, oh, that's okay.
Yeah.
But then if you just don't come back and there's no communication, it's like, how long can you be away?
I don't know. Yeah, like, did he leave and say he was coming back?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, because in the original telling of it, the grandfather or whatever is made, or the great grandfather is made out to be very selfish. But when we see the flashbacks, I don't know how Hector was originally, but he seems very remorseful. He seems like a family man. He seems like he really wants to come back to his family.
Yeah, we forgive him.
Yeah, that's we fine. Forgive Hector.
He left, he realized he made a mistake, he tried to come back almost instantly.
He tried. And then he got murdered.
And then he got murdered, so that's the idea.
Who's the real victim? The guy, you, the one that doesn't like music, or the guy who got murdered?
Yeah, Yeah, exactly. So, but I can understand why it's hard for her to forgive him.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, I bought into the tension.
So, Imelda sort of puts Hector in his place a bit, but she does forgive him, and Miguel gets the opportunity to go back to the land of the living. But the problem is, the only person that remembers Hector is Coco, and Coco is 99 years old, and she's starting to forget things.
Yes, and if she forgets Hector, he dies.
And so Miguel goes back, and he thinks, you know what, I think I can help Coco remember her dad. She won't have heard this before, because they banned music, but what if I play her Remember Me, that he used to play as a lullaby to her as a little baby? And he plays it, and you see it, she's kind of in her own little zombie land the whole time. And then you see it kind of perk up, and she knows the song. And I didn't cry. I definitely didn't cry.
Oh, that's good. And, he's remembered, so he stays alive in the land of the dead. And I guess every year after that, Day of the Dead, they put their the photo of him up.
Yes, because now Miguel's there to remember Hector, and now the family's allowed to put the photo up, and they can come over for the land, to the land of living on the Day of the Dead, and they can the family can enjoy music.
And Coco dies and is reunited with them.
Yeah. So Coco gets to come back.
You sort of want people to die in this movie. You're like, oh great, when they die.
it's more like retirement. Dying almost seems like retirement. It's like, hey, you don't have to work anymore, and you can like move to Florida and hang out with the family. It's great.
Very good. And everyone, they find all the old sheet music from Hector, and they realize that Miguel was a fraud, and they take down all his statues and things like that.
Yes.
Okay. Did you like this movie, Jonathan?
I had high hopes, but not necessarily high expectations, because Pixar has wobbled a little bit recently. But I did like the theme. I was pretty much instantly hooked by the story and the visuals of it. And I was really blown away the first time we go to the Land of the Dead, where you see him kind of cross the bridge and it lights up and you see all the colors of the land. And you're like, wow, okay, I really love the design of this. And you really rooted for Miguel. He's really likable because he's sort of a bit cheeky. He's kind of adventurous. He's great at playing guitar. You think, oh, yeah, we want him to go to the talent show and do well, or you want him to undo the curse. So he's a great lead character. And I thought it was funny too. I can't really remember that many of the funny lines, but this is just sort of like a silly throwaway one. But when he sees it the land of the dead for the first time, and he's like, oh wow, this is actually real. And they're like, yeah, what did you think? And he's like, oh, I thought it was just something adults made up, like vegetables or like vitamins or whatever he said. So
yeah.
I butchered it, and it wasn't even one of the better lines. But whatever, I thought it was funny. Yeah, I totally bought into it. I was completely on board.
Yeah. I think when I'm thinking of Pixar films, I'm thinking, have they transported me to a new world?
Mm.
And that's what I really liked about Pixar at its greatest, like, is each sort of film is this, other than the sequels, is this new sort of world you're entering, and they don't really double up too much in terms of environments, Pixar. You know, you have Ratatouille that's like, you know, Parisian kitchens, and then you'll have like Inside Out in the mind of a like girl, or, you know, The Incredibles, this big superhero like world and things like that. Finding Nemo, the sort of underworld. And this brought me to a completely different world that I was captivated by. I was invested in the characters and their journeys, and had a few laughs along the way.
And then were you, so we both bought into it. Were you satisfied with how it played out?
I was pretty satisfied with how it came out, played out, yeah.
Yeah, I was totally satisfied. Obviously, Miguel breaks the curse. He gets to come back, play music, introduce the family to music. There's redemption for Hector. I called him a sort of a down on his luck type guy, but they turn that around. He also gets the credit for being the great songwriter that he was, gets to come see his family, and gets to be reunited with Coco as well. Hey. So it's, I thought it was very clever, very touching, great outcomes, redemption for all the characters that I cared about. I was very satisfied indeed.
Yeah. No, that was fantastic. So, should we get a verdict now, Jonathan?
Yeah. Screen verdict for Coco. I sort of feel like I gave my pros and cons for it already. Well, I guess I could give some cons. There aren't really a lot. I thought overall most of 80 to 90% of the jokes landed. You know, there were a couple maybe things that were a little bit corny or cheesy, but nothing that bothered me overly. And there were a couple of plot devices that seemed like a little bit convenient. It's like you get to the Land of the Dead. It's like, here's another talent show where if you win, you can get... I thought, I didn't hate it. It wasn't completely outside the realm of... believability within that world, but I just thought, you know, that is convenient. But he doesn't even end up going through that. He kind of like sneaks in with the other people, so they semi-sidestep that in a way. But other than that, I can't really think of anything, any complaints. I love the visuals, I love the story, I love the music. The soundtrack was great. The week or two after I watched it, I must have listened to the soundtrack over and over again. Yeah, I definitely didn't cry. I didn't cry, did not cry at any point during the movie. So I'm going to give Coco a 9.5 out of 10.
Whoa! That's huge.
Huge.
I think my issues with Coco were similar to yours, in that I think some of the bits of the storyline were a bit convenient. I think also... there were times when it wasn't quite as satisfying as I would have hoped. So it's not really a negative. It's just, like, maybe not... didn't he hit the heights of some of the other Pixar films that I love? Like, you know, so, like, Wally and Eve dancing in space. There wasn't really a moment in this film that, like, reached that height for me. And even the song Remember Me, I didn't find as memorable... or find it as believable as a pop song sort of thing. But that all being said, it was a great movie. I've gone through all my pros. I'm going to give it a 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10. Ooh, okay, here we go. This is going to be very interesting because as fans of the podcast know, we like to rank our Pixar films. Ours is, we don't own them. The Pixar films. Every time a new one comes out, we place it in our Pixar rank. It's hotly contested, hotly debated every time. We both liked it. Let's find out now. How high does it go?
Do you want me to read through the list, Jonathan, of all the Pixar movies and where we've ranked them?
Okay. Should we do it from bottom to top?
Whatever you'd like.
All right. Matt, you can read out our Pixar rank from lowest to highest rank.
I'm sorry if I make a mistake. My list is a little bit... this is what I did the other day. I thought, you know what? I want to rank the Pixar films just on my own, just to see, like, how different it is from our list. So I sort of just, like, just spitball, just put a couple minutes, did it, and then I wrote the numbers of our list next to that. So they're not quite in order on my page, but I do have some numbers are right that are next to them. So I'll do my best. 18, Cars 2. 17, Brave. 16, The Good Dinosaur. 15, Cars 3. 14, Cars. 11, 13, Monsters University. Mm-hmm. 12, Finding Dory. 11, A Bug's Life. 10, Toy Story 2. 9, The Incredibles. 8, Finding Nemo. 7, Ratatouille. 6, Inside Out. 5, Wall-E. 4, Up. 3, Toy Story. 2, Monsters, Inc. And 1, Toy Story 3. And you know who directed Coco, Jonathan?
Pete Docter, was it?
I think it was Lee Unkrich. Lee Unkrich, who has directed only, I think the last one he directed was Toy Story 3, which is the top of our list.
Yeah, let me see. He did Coco. He did Toy Story 3. He was a co-director on Finding Nemo, Monsters, yeah, Inc., and Toy Story 2.
I'm pretty sure Brad Bird's sort of the main director on... Andrew Stanton's the main director on Finding Nemo. Like, I always think of that as a Stanton.
So that's the rank...
Toy Story 3 and Coco are this guy's big ones, I think.
Well, he said...
Monsters, Inc.'s a Pete Docter. Pete Docter did Monsters, Inc.
Anyway.
Pete Docter is my favourite. Because he did Inside Out, Monsters, Inc. and Up.
Strong.
But if Coco's very high, Lee Unkrich could be battling it out there.
So there we go. It's our role now to try and place that... To place Coco within that rank. So should we let's start somewhere in like the bottom third, let's say what was number 10?
10 was Toy Story 2.
Toy Story 2. Okay, Matt. Coco, above or below Toy Story 2?
I would say above.
Above. Okay. I am in agreement. I am in agreement that it should be above.
I'm not surprised with your 9-point rating for Coco.
Okay. Should we go...
It's right in the top 10. Good job, Coco.
Yeah. All right. Should we go one by one? Because I have a feeling like it's going to be... If you gave it an 8, it's probably not number 1. It's going to be somewhere...
It's not my number 1.
Yeah, I mean, I might be able to argue to get you to bump it up a couple of spots higher, but let's see. Let's go number 9. What was number 9?
The Incredibles.
The Incredibles. Okay, I would put it above The Incredibles.
I'm happy with that, yeah.
Okay, you're doing well so far, Coco. What was number 8?
Finding Nemo.
I'd also put it above Finding Nemo.
Yeah, I'm a bit higher on Finding Nemo than you, though. I remember when we first did this rank that you would have put Finding Nemo a bit lower on the list.
You know, it's not one that I've rewatched recently, so perhaps I need to give it another go. But it's never been in my top echelon, and I don't think Finding Dory helped it. It wasn't like, oh, I really like this world. This is great. Maybe I need to go back. It was kind of like, it's all right.
I'm happy to put it above Finding Nemo. That's fine with me.
All right, we're moving and grooving. All right, what was number 7?
Ratatouille.
Okay, I'm a fan of Ratatouille. Ratatouille's definitely a good one. But I like Coco even more.
See, this is, I think, where the arguments are going to begin. Yeah, I don't know. Ratatouille is very good.
All right. Well, Ratatouille is a very interesting world. It's a very funny film. What heights do you think Ratatouille reaches? Is there a particular scene or visual or like emotional moment that stands out for you in Ratatouille?
Boy, should have watched Ratatouille before. In a few years, I've seen Ratatouille. I think when Egon has the Ratatouille at the end of the movie, seeing that dish get concocted.
Yeah, it's hard to argue the specifics. I remember thinking Ratatouille was really entertaining and really fun. But there wasn't a moment, there wasn't an X factor, there wasn't an emotional connection that I can draw on to say, that's what made it stand out. That's what makes it one of my favorite Pixar films. Whereas Coco, when he sings Remember, when Miguel sings Remember Me to Coco, I don't know if anything hits in Ratatouille as hard as that.
It was good. I like the song Remember Me. It's very good. I'm happy for it to win the Oscar for best song and stuff. But it's not like one of my all-time great movie songs.
That's interesting because you're a musical person. You tend to like the I think musicals more than me. So I'm surprised you didn't latch onto the music. I know it's a little bit arbitrary musical taste, but I loved it. Yeah, I think it was one of my favorite songs.
Interesting.
I listened to it 100 times, like after the watching the movie.
Yeah, I might be more of a musical guy than you, but you were just as much about more of a music guy than me from your glory days on the Radiohead forum.
Yeah, just the guitar was just so Johnny Greenwood inspired. I couldn't help but connect to it.
Yeah, this is really interesting because I'm a big believer, and I was thinking about this the other day, that the Pixar renaissance, the Pixar like peak period, is from Ratatouille to Toy Story 3.
Yeah.
That is when Pixar was at their very best.
And it's a very clear, if not beginning, it's a very clear end. Because it went from Toy Story 3, our number one, to Cars 2, our dead last number 18. Okay.
So I'm very protective, I guess, of those, the four films that I believe were in the Pixar peak period, which, for those who don't know, were Ratatouille, Wall-E, Up, and Toy Story 3. I think that's their best run of four films ever, and of a very impressive canon.
Here are two reasons not to protect that run as much. One, Monsters, Inc. is not part of that run, and yet it's clearly better than Ratatouille. So we can give credit to Pixar outside of that run. It's not like, no, the genius was only between 08 and 11. And secondly, don't you think it's a much more optimistic approach to be like, they've still got it. They can do it. It's not like, it'll never be as good as the run. The run is over.
Not as good as when Aykroyd and Murray were on the show.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that like a staple that everybody hates SNL when it's on until those people go on to be movie stars and you're like, oh, can you believe who was on SNL back then?
That's sort of fair. I sort of think we're also going to be worried about recency bias though, right? Like, we just saw Coco and love that.
Saw it months ago. Saw it in November.
Yeah, but I've seen Ratatouille in like 7 years.
Whose fault is that? Can't be that good if you weren't tempted to rewatch it in the last 7 years.
On camp, I watched Wall-E twice. It's going to be very hard to convince me to put Coco over Wall-E, but that's getting a bit ahead of us. Above Ratatouille's Inside Out, how do you compare it to Inside Out? Let's just for argument's sake, we put it over Ratatouille.
Yeah, I feel like I don't know if it was your barrier, but maybe ballpark area was Ratatouille. For me, it was Inside Out.
Okay.
The caveat to that being, I could maybe put it above Up.
Yeah, this is where this is why doing a list with another person can get interesting, because people have made slightly different compromises at times. Like, I'd be happy to put Coco above Toy Story.
Whoa!
I don't think this is news, but I would have the original Toy Story a bit lower.
Really? I feel...
It should be up there, but it's there. It's very high.
Why is it third then? I don't think it's in my top three.
You put in the case for an original podcast.
Fair enough. Well, okay. Maybe I need to rewatch Toy Story. But in my mind, my top three that I would not put Coco above would be Toy Story 3, Monsters, Inc., and WALL-E. I think it's in the discussion of Ratatouille, Inside Out, Up, and the original Toy Story.
Okay. Look, you're not too dissimilar to me. I think it more sort of fits in between your sort of Ratatouille sort of area. Fits like cleanly beneath that upper echelon in my mind, but neatly above the sort of more Finding Nemo, Incredibles, Bugs Life sort of very strong films, but not in that top shelf for Pixar. And again, it's probably worth pointing out, this is in a Pixar world, these comparisons. Like, this is not top shelf movie, second shelf movie. This is like Pixar scale, and Pixar, up until Cars 2, was the most successful studio of all time.
Yeah.
Producing critically acclaimed and box office hits. I think every film they had made up until Cars 2 was a box office hit and one of the most critically acclaimed films of that year. So, like, this is the cream of the crop. This is the best of the best when we're talking sort of top 12 Pixar movies.
Yes, if you're second tier Pixar, that's like in the ballpark of 9 out of 10.
Yeah. So, please don't go back to our reviews and hear what scores they gave these movies, because probably was not 9 out of 10.
Okay, so Inside Out, what's your opinion? Coco, above or below?
Well, I think Inside Out's better.
You think Inside Out's better?
Yeah. Like, here's just throwing something at you. Is where Coco's going to land in between Ratatouille and Inside Out on our list?
Yeah, that seems logical to me.
Because even though I might put it above Toy Story, you might put it above Up, or you might put it above Toy Story and Up, neither of us are probably going to want to put it over WALL-E.
Correct.
I think, so it's really down to whether it's, well, I guess it's either going to be below Ratatouille, above Inside Out, or in between.
I think, because I like it a bit more and you like it a bit less, it makes sense to put it between Ratatouille and Inside Out.
If you had your druthers, if you just got to make the call, would you put it above Inside Out?
I gave them both a 9.5 out of 10, so it's they're really neck and neck. Nothing annoyed me in Coco as much as the sad character annoyed me in Inside Out. So maybe I'd give the edge to Coco, but there were elements... But Inside Out was just so great in pretty much every other respect, so...
I feel like the fact it took you so long to answer that, and the fact that I prefer Inside Out, means we should probably put it above Ratatouille and below Inside Out.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Okay, I think that's where we're going to land. I feel like after us doing a few of these recently, we do have a bit of a WALL-E ceiling.
Yeah, we have.
And it's sort of, and to be fair, the big beneficiaries are Up and Toy Story.
Yeah,
they are being protected by WALL-E in our fourth slot. It would need to be a bloody good movie for both of us to want to move something above WALL-E.
The flip side of that, if something does come out and blow us away, WALL-E those, well, yeah, Wally could end up being hurt, because if we start at the top, we could end up putting something above Toy Story, or above Up, before we even decide, before we even discuss Wally.
Yeah, I guess so. I feel like we're going to have to talk about Wally if we're putting a film in the top three.
Yes, definitely.
I feel like we're not going to be able to avoid that discussion. Yes. So, this is interesting. Oh, well, do you want to hear the full list now?
Yeah, good performance from Coco. I think it ended up landing in seventh. That's a good performance. Let's do a quick rundown of the updated Pixar rank.
Toy Story, number one. I'll go top from bottom this time.
Yeah.
The other way last time. Number one, Toy Story 3. Number two, Monsters, Inc. Number three, Toy Story. Number four, five, Wall-E. Six, Inside Out. Seven, Coco. Eight, Ratatouille. 9, Finding Nemo. 10, The Incredibles. 11, Toy Story 2. 12, A Bug's Life. 13, Finding Dory. 14, Monsters University. 15, Cars. 16, Cars 3. What number are we up to? 17, The Good Dinosaur. 18, Brave. And 19, Cars 2.
Well, there you go. We've ranked all 19 Pixar films. What's number 20? What comes out next?
It'll be The Incredibles 2.
Okay, so that's a middle of the pack one. We enjoy Incredibles. Interesting to see they don't have the best track record with sequels, other than Toy Story 3. So it'll be interesting to see how The Incredibles 2 does.
Yeah, I would say of all the Pixar movies, The Incredibles falls in the middle, but I'd say it's the one that probably naturally fits a sequel the best, or maybe even the only one that demanded a sequel.
Nah, I don't think you can get away with a superhero sequel. I don't think people will watch that.
They end the movie with a cliffhanger. So I actually think of any of the sequels, this is the one that, like, when I saw Incredibles 1, I'm like, oh yeah, there'll be an Incredibles 2. I'm surprised it took this long to do an Incredibles 2.
Yeah, well, hopefully it's because they wanted to get it right.
Yeah, but it's like, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if it can be better than Incredibles 1, though. Because Toy Story 3 is the only sequel that has exceeded its prequels.
Yes.
Cars 3 is higher than Cars 2.
Ah, good point.
Yeah, but still the original.
Not an
Cars
original, yeah.
Yeah. That'll be interesting. Any quick housekeeping this week, Jonathan?
Housekeeping? No, nothing in particular. Just we've got a couple things to look forward to. The Oscars are coming up soon, so we'll do.
We'll do a preview or review. It's pretty well we can schedule Tom.
And I'm sure we can do some film reviews as well, because I've been watching a few films for the awards season.
Yes.
Black Panther just came out. Everybody's talking about that.
Yeah, what about Paddington 2? Are we going to do a Paddington 2 review?
I haven't seen Paddington 1.
I don't think you need to. I don't know, have you heard this? Paddington 2 is apparently the top-reviewed movie on Rotten Tomatoes of all time.
All time. Take that,
yeah.
Citizen Kane.
Yeah, and on Metacritic, it's got like an 84 or something.
All right, well, I'll have to check it out.
I did not have high expectations, but I sort of feel like we sort of have to maybe have a peek at a bit at Paddington 2.
Yeah, let us know. Facebook.com/ScreenVerdictPodcast if you want us to review Paddington 2 or anything else. If there's any other films, TV shows that you're keen to hear our thoughts on, let us know.
I'm sure Game of Thrones and Curb Your Enthusiasm are coming, right, Jonathan?
If you pay for an HBO subscription.
I might for 1 month so we can get those podcasts. the last season of Curb Your Enthusiasm, I think it's one of our most popular podcasts of all time.
Yeah, well, we're big Curb fans. I'll get onto that.
Yeah. And I just have one quick side question. Did you see my Valentine's Day post?
No, I think I missed that.
Can you quickly just look at it? It's on Facebook or Instagram. Can you just have a look and tell me what read you get off that post?
What, like, does it come across as fun and flirty or sad and pathetic?
Yeah, something like that. Just quickly tell me what you think. It's on my Facebook. It's probably, like, one of the more recent posts. It's also on my Instagram, but...
Okay. Your name was Matthew Goblet? Is that what I should search for?
It's Matt Noble. Come on, buddy.
I bet you're more offended by the Matthew than the Goblet.
No, I don't mind Matthew. That's fine.
Okay. Here is the post. It reads, Happy hashtag Valentine's Day 2018. So Matt wants people to see, anybody that's searching for Valentine's, Matt wants.
I think I'm just for Instagram to get more likes. Instagram.
It has three pictures. One is you. All right, you're dressed well. You got a nice shirt and tie. You got a nice beer. Someone's taking a picture of you across a table. There's a waitress. So you're in like a restaurant. There's an unsuspecting waitress in this picture. Don't know if that.
What do you mean by unsuspecting? like you're going to jump out and attack her at some point.
Just feel like in 2018, you really need to err on the side of caution. See, so that's black and white, so everyone knows you're pretentious. Then you got, let me see, the second picture is a close-up of the food. You got some noodles, some, what are these, oysters or something?
It's like a seafood pasta, seafood spaghetti topic.
All right, well, I'm allergic to shellfish, so this looks pretty gross to me. I'm going to keep scrolling. And then there's a picture of you perhaps outside the restaurant. Again, we've gone from black and white to colour to black and white because the hell with consistency. You've now put a suit on, so we've escalated things from the shirt and tie. We've now got a jacket. You're sitting on a bench. You're looking very excited. You look like you're waiting for something. Maybe someone's going to throw you a ball. Maybe a relative's just got home from war, but there's no one. We don't know. It's ambiguous. There's no one else in the picture. It's just you waiting for something. Is that a metaphor for love?
Just what vibes does it give? Like,
If I didn't know you and someone's like, who is this man?
Okay, yeah, obviously, yeah.
I'd think he seems to be very confused. Perhaps he hasn't heard of Valentine's Day before. Maybe he doesn't know what that is. And he just decided to post things that he was doing that day. And because other people were saying Valentine's Day, he was like, oh, I guess it's Valentine's Day. I'll tag this normal day of going to a restaurant and eating food by myself with Valentine's Day, not knowing what that really means.
I like that. Yeah, that's good.
It's like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm Swedish. We don't do Valentine's Day in Sweden, but... I just thought I'd use the hashtag because everybody else was. What were you going for?
I was just going for, hey, this is a bit of fun. Like, Valentine's Day, I'm out at a nice restaurant, might as well post some photos. It's sort of a bit self-deprecating because I'm on my own, but it's sort of not sad.
It's not asking for sympathy.
Yes.
It's not like, oh... Guys, on my own for Valentine's Day, or dinner for one.
Yeah, but I also didn't want to, like, ignore the holiday either. You know, so like, oh, because I'm single, I'm like, or whatever, I hate Valentine's Day, I'm like, getting one of those people, I don't celebrate or care about Valentine's Day sort of thing.
Yeah, you're just pointing out for... maybe a future Valentine for next year. Like,
This, I know a good restaurant.
This is what you missed out on in 2018. But if you play your cards right in 2019, pasta for two.
I did not think of that at all, but I can see that thing. Yeah, because I there was a bit of response to that post. The next day, I got a text from my friend Liz going, oh, who did you have dinner with last night? And, my friend Will sent me a message going, oh, what was the big Valentine's news? Something like that. So, oh, no, I wasn't intending this at all.
You're like, who's the mystery date that's taking all these photos?
Yeah. Sort of like, that's my style. I'm going to go out on a date for Valentine's Day and get them to take pictures of me. Sugar up tight. Am I getting photos of me for my Instagram?
Yeah. This waitress was like, oh, do you want me to take a photo of the two of you? And you were like, no.
Yeah, she can get one of me. That's fine.
Yeah. It's like, nah, that's how we do it. We take turns. I take one of her. She takes one of me. Like, people will get it. I'll post it.
So you saw that. You didn't read that. It's not like everybody saw that. Thought, oh, Matt's got this mystery girlfriend.
Nah, I feel like if you did, you'd have made it way more obvious. Like, yeah. You'd have had your faces right next to each other. You'd have tagged her in the image and in the text. And then you'd have said, you'd have made it very clear. You'd want everybody to know. There'd be no confusion.
I would have made it heaps more obvious. Or maybe he's less obvious, but not that level of obviousness.
You'd have left a trail of clues, crumbs, evidence.
Yeah, anyway. I was actually out to dinner, not on my own, although that's what the photos made it says. I was out with Jess's husband, Chris. Do you remember Chris?
Yes.
Chris Gray?
Which begs the obvious question, where was Jess on Valentine's Day?
I think there was a girl's night out or something like that with her work. It was a girl's night out, so...
That sounds like an event intentionally, under the guise of unintentionally, planned by a single girl. It's like, guys, we haven't hung out. We should get drinks, watch a movie, grab some wine, whatever. You know, any day. Tuesday? You guys free Tuesday? I'm free Tuesday.
Yeah, I think it's Wednesday this year, but yeah. I think a lot of your friends were single, maybe, but I don't really know.
And then everybody else is like, oh, crap, Wednesday is Valentine's Day. And then that person, you're like, what? We've had this on the books for months, guys. Come on. I bought the canapes and everything.
Yeah.
Don't back out on me now.
then we got some Ben and Jerry's, and then Jess came and met up with us because she was giving Chris a lift home to their house. Anyway, so that was good. I don't think they're a big Valentine's. You know, some couples really get into Valentine's Day, others not as much. I don't think they're the big Valentine's Day couple.
Yeah, we just saved it and went out on the weekend. We were like, yeah, we're not going to try and get a reservation on Valentine's Day.
It's a good idea. It's probably cheaper, too.
Yeah.
And I think their anniversary is like a week before or after Valentine's Day, so I think they sort of do the anniversary thing instead. So, yeah.
Chris is like, what am I made of, flowers?
Yeah. But anyway, it was a lovely night with Chris. Lovely to be with.
He had a lovely night too. You wouldn't know it because he's not in any of the photos.
I think there is a photo of me and Chris, actually. Never got sent to me though.
Very good.
All right. I think actually Jess took a photo of Chris taking a photo of me.
of the waitress without permission.
Okay. So.
All right.
Now, just so people know, I blurred her out in the photo. Why, I've made the focal point of the photo me. Everyone else is blurry.
That's what you sign up for. If you work at a nice... If you're working at a nice restaurant on Valentine's Day, being in the background of someone's Instagram post is just part of the job, really.
Part of the gig. I try to be sensitive by blurring instead of all the surrounding people.
All right. Very good. Well, we hope you enjoyed Valentine's Day. We hope you enjoyed our Cocoa podcast. And we hope to see you next week.
Yes.